The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on October 20th, 1987 at New Talavan Farm in Carrier, Mississippi. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 19 through 21.
Nisamyaitat
Nisamyaitat
Suraganaha
Suraganaha
Suragana
Suragana
Mahendra
Mahendra
Varunadaya
Varunadaya
Nadyagachan
Nadyagachan
Swayam
Swayam
Mantraya
Mantraya
Mantrayanto
Mantrayanto
Vinishchitam
Vinishchitam
Samyaitat Suragana
Samyaitat Suragana
Mahendra Varunadaya
Mahendra Varunadaya
Nadya Gacchan Swayang Mantray
Nadya Gacchan Swayang Mantray
Mantrayanto Vinishchitam
Mantrayanto Vinishchitam.
There's another verse, 7th and 18 come together.
Tato Brahma Sabhang Jagmur Meror Murdhani Sarvasaha Sarvang Vigyapayang Chakru Pranata Parameshtine.
Translation. Lord Indra, Varuna, and the other demigods, seeing their lives in such a state, consulted among themselves, but they could not find any solution. Then all the demigods assembled and went together to the peak of Sumeru Mountain. There in the assembly of Lord Brahma, they fell down to offer Lord Brahma their obeisances. Then they informed him of all the incidents that had taken place. Text 19:20.
Savilokendra bhavadhim nisatvan tigata prabhan lokana mangala prayan asuranayata vibhu samahitena manasa samsmaran purushan param. Uvachut phula padano devansa bhagavan para.
Translation. Upon seeing that the demigods were bereft of all influence and strength, and that the three worlds were consequently devoid of auspiciousness, and upon seeing that the demigods were in an awkward position, whereas all the demons were flourishing, Lord Brahma, who is above all the demigods and who is most powerful, concentrated his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, being encouraged, he became bright-faced and spoke to the demigods as follows. Translation with repetition. Upon seeing that the demigods, were bereft of all influence,
and strength,
and that the three worlds,
were
consequently,
devoid of auspiciousness.
And upon seeing that the demigods, were in an awkward position. Whereas all the demons were flourishing. Lord Brahma, who is above all the demigods.
Who is most powerful.
Concentrated his mind on the Supreme Personality of God. Thus being encouraged.
He became bright-faced.
Spoke to the demigods as follows. Report. After hearing from the demigods the real situation, Lord Brahma was very much concerned because the demons were unnecessarily so powerful. When demons become powerful, the entire world is placed in an awkward position because demons are simply interested in their own sense gratification and not in the welfare of the world. Demigods or devotees, however, are concerned with the welfare of all living beings. Srila Rupa Goswami, for example, left his ministership and went to Vrindavana for the benefit of the entire world. Lokanam hitakarino. This is the nature of a saintly person or demigod. Even impersonalists think of the welfare of all people. Thus, Brahma was very much concerned at seeing the demons in power. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to texts 17, 18, 19, and 20 of Chapter 5, Canto 8 of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of the demigods' appeal to the Lord. The demigods are being defeated by demons. The demigods are bereft of their influence. They tried to figure out a solution, but they couldn't. So they went to Lord Brahma. This is a parampara system. Someone somehow finds oneself in a difficult position. This case is material, it may also be spiritual. One tries to solve the problem, discuss it with one's peers, one's immediate associates. If you're not able to find out the spiritual solution, then you go to the spiritual authority. Of course, in the case of Lord Brahma, then he meditates upon Krishna. He goes to Krishna, the next higher authority. The Brahma is the highest authority in the material world. Only higher than him is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's interesting to note how all of the pious people in the universe, they're all become impoverished because of the offense of Indra. Durvasa Muni was going along. Durvasa Muni thought, let me give my blessings to Indra. He offered Indra a flower garland. Indra was riding on his elephant. He didn't take it very seriously that a great saint like Durvasa Muni is offering flower garland. Instead, he put it on the trunk of his elephant. The elephant doesn't know what you're going to do with the flower garland. He tosses it. And next he keeps walking and goes under his feet. So Durvasa Muni, he's very powerful. He can give a blessing. He can also give a curse. So he felt insulted. Here I give my blessing to this Indra. Instead he tosses the thing on the ground and tramples on it. All right, we'll see how powerful and influential he is. He thinks he's so big with his wealth. He curses them to become completely poor. The Indra, the demigods are responsible for administration of the universe. When the administration becomes poor, the people become poor. So all the planets, they suffer. All the general citizens become materially in a difficult position. But just like when there's a weak government, the honest citizens, they suffer. But the criminals, they flourish. So all the demons who don't follow the law, the government anyway, they have a heyday. Because the government's weak, they attack the government, they attack the demigods. This is a universal government. And the demons and their organized crime, whatever, they completely take over the show. So the demigods, they're in a difficult situation, what to do. So they go to Lord Brahma to try to figure out what is the solution. So, as Prabhupada in the previous purport, he mentions how when one is materially opulent, well, he should learn to be sober and well-behaved toward Vaishnavas and saintly persons, otherwise he will fall down. Prabhupada also quotes, the materially opulent person does not care about anyone, and thus he commits offenses to great personalities such as devotees and great saints. This is the way of material opulence, as described by Sukadeva Goswami. Dhana Durmad Andha. Dhana means wealth. Durmad Andha. Prabhupada quotes it. Too much wealth makes one blind. Dhana is wealth. Durmad. Mud means intoxicated. Dur means bad or inauspicious. Andha means blind. Durmad Andha means that one that's completely misdirected and blind due to his own madness, his own false pride. Well, sometimes you find that because people have some material prosperity, they neglect the devotees. They look down on them. What are these people? But as a result, they're missing a great opportunity to further advance by serving Krishna through the devotees. The devotees are the representatives of Krishna on this earth. And when the Vaishnavas go out to engage the karmis into the devotional service, then it's a great opportunity for them to actually take this blessing of the Lord and further advance. The Sankirtan devotees are spreading the mercy of the Lord all around. the persons knowingly give to the Krishna conscious movement, that's Gata Sukriti, that conscious, pious result, most auspicious for them. Of course, if someone says, oh, these are Hare Krishnas, I won't give any, then it's not so good for them. However, sometimes someone may not know who are these people really clearly, but they give, so they get Agata Sukriti. Unknowingly they're giving, so they get some benefit. So like that, there are different categories. In this case, Indra, even though he was so powerful, he also was very proud. That what does he need to worry about all these saints and things? So he gets the garland, gives it to his elephant. It's like someone, you know, give a garland, gives it to his dog here. So Vaishnava, of course, generally doesn't curse anyone. The difference between the Vaishnavas and the great saints, and even the great saints, sometimes if they see that someone is misdirected due to too much material opulence, they can also remove that. Person gets, like Indra gets a big position, head administrator of the universe, a lot of opulence, a lot of wealth, a lot of power because of his previous activities. But the saints, they can redirect the karmic flow. By their curses, they can remove or redirect or do anything. Karma is a fluid thing, but for the conditioned soul, doesn't have control over it. And on the higher levels, Krishna and even the controlling demigods, they have the power to reconform the arrangement of the karma, to do various things. There's even, we know from the Bhagavatam, that sometimes a person can't even do something and give the karma to someone else. There was one Ekadasi, I think, a king, he was having difficulty, so the whole kingdom observed the Ekadasi and gave the reactions to the king, the pious reactions, and then he got corrected from his difficulty. So karma is something that can is changeable on the higher level through spiritual sacrifices, through offenses, through curses, things like that. But normally, just by material endeavor, you can't get out of it. Person is locked in. I was explaining how there are many examples of this. Even astrologers, they would predict something and someone would try his level best to get out of it, but it would still happen. Because he would try different material methods. Karma can be changed, but not by material method. If someone insults a chaste woman, calling her a prostitute or something like that, that reduces his longevity. In other words, good karma he has, that normally one enjoys the good karma and then you get the bad reaction. So that just reduces the time for you to get the bad reaction. They start insulting pious saintly people. Where, according to experts on prasna, omens, signs and things like that, if someone starts a journey and sees a chaste woman at the beginning of the journey, that means the journey will be successful. There are many other signs, but just like that. So the same thing can be Durvasa Muni. He gave a garland. Indra could have taken, thank you very much, a little humility. He could have taken whatever blessing was there from Durvasa Muni and ran with it. But instead he threw it off. He got cursed. Now the whole universe is suffering. The whole universe is suffering because of one person, unconscious thought, unconscious act. This offense is a very serious matter. I was explaining this morning about the story of Haridas Thakur and Gopal Chakravarti, who insulted him, saying that he was a fanatic and how you could get love of Krishna how you could get liberation by chanting Hare Krishna even accidentally. So when that happened, his employers, they went and begged to Haridas Thakur, please forgive us. Why should they beg forgiveness? They didn't commit any offense. The other one committed it because they heard the offense. They were present. Everyone who's present, anyone who hears it and doesn't protest, they're all party to the reaction. So they knew that. They're expert in the science. They immediately went to Haridas Thakur, please forgive us. They touched his feet, please forgive us. And they fired that offender immediately. Ramchandra Khan, he offended Haridas Thakur by sending that Hira, the prostitute, after dancing girl to try to cause Haridas Thakur to fall down. Then afterwards when Nityananda Prabhu came, He insulted Nityananda Prabhu. So then after that, after Nityananda was insulted and left, then the Yavanas came and they completely looted everything. The Mohammedan bigger tax collector came, looted the property of Ramchandra Khan, burned down the village, you know, just, I mean, they did just a complete, they just wiped out the entire village, as the Prabhupada explains in the purport, that not only Ramchandra Khan, but even the innocent villagers who didn't even know anything about it, they all had to take, because they're all part of the same community, they all had to take the reaction for offending the Vaishnava, Nityananda Prabhu. So that's why these lessons are there, we read over them, we glean over them. The one thing that Prabhupada repeatedly said he was very concerned about was that in the West, words are exchanged very freely. Arguments are cheap, and we don't take it very seriously. And he was concerned about that you're all Vaishnavas, you're all pure devotees, you're all dear to Krishna. Don't fight amongst yourselves. That will be Vaishnava aparadha. Don't think that only I'm the Vaishnava. You're all Vaishnavas. Don't fight amongst you. You can give blessings to people. He used to tell, when someone wanted to go out preaching in the Middle East or something, he'd say, call all the Vaishnavas, give him your blessing. Who are we to give blessings? Prabhupada, your blessing is enough. That's all right. My blessing is that you're also Vaishnavas. You give your blessing. For us, it was very difficult to understand because we could see that Prabhupada was directly empowered by Krishna and we're very insignificant. But yet Prabhupada always called in the devotees and requested, give your blessings. Encourage this person. At the same time, he would say, don't fight, don't criticize each other. So maybe someone is as big as a universe Vaishnava and someone is as small as a, you see, big Vaishnava. But still, all Vaishnavas are dear to Krishna and should not be offended. I was even shocked to see in the 11th canto how it's explained in the purport that even an Uttam Adhikari, if he offends a Kanishta Adhikari, obstructs a Kanishta Adhikari in his spiritual progress out of false pride or out of some offensive mentality, that the Uttam Adhikari can fall down from his position and become again conditioned soul. And that means that offenses are practically number one enemy. This is the aids of the devotees. It's the, what they call that, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. That we are only able to remain Krishna conscious as long as we have the shelter of Guru, Guru Parampara, Krishna, Chaitanya Nityananda. By their mercy, we're protected. Even Maya sent some thoughts, sent some things. How is it we're able to be immune to any degree? Or even if someone has a fall down, how are they able to recover and again remain in the shelter of Krishna? That's by their protection, by the mercy. If that's removed, then Maya, there's no defense. The individual soul is not strong enough to defend against Maya. It's only by the mercy of Guru and Krishna that one can be protected against Maya. That's why Srila Prabhupada again and again he admonished, you cling to the lotus feet of Nitai and Gaur, then you'll be protected. This is very difficult because our nature is always to just be very kind of... Some things are constructive. Criticism is also an aspect of spiritual life. Guru has to critically analyze the disciples. God brothers have to sometimes critically analyze each other and help. These things are there. So whether the line between that and something which is actually revengeful or envious, something which is actually not meant for the welfare of another, which is done out of false pride or out of anger, that difference may not appear significant, but in actuality the reaction is much different. Just like the parent disciplines the child. That's not out of enviousness, that's out of a desire to help the child. Even sometimes it may not be the appropriate, exact action, but the intent, if it's proper, that is of course important. Even the child in the long run will see that the intent was genuine. But if the intent is just out of anger or some other frustration, then that breaks down the whole relationship. This is like an example. So in the spiritual sense, if someone does something out of, like Indra, he didn't have any, he could just... Durvasa Muni is far his superior. Durvasa Muni is a Manas Putra of Lord Brahma. He's directly a mental son of Brahma. He wasn't even born by ordinary birth. Brahma just created him from his mind. So I mean, that's a very special kind of personality. Like there's Narada Muni, Durvasa, Bhrigu, there's a few who simply come out of Lord Brahma. They're not born, there's no mother of Bhrigu. It's just from Brahma himself. Of course, Narada was already liberated soul, so he's in another transcendental category, but from the superficial, he's also a son of Brahma, but he just came from Brahma. He didn't have any mother either on this birth, on this appearance. But Durvasa is not pure devotee, but he's a great saint, very powerful. The Pandavas knew his power. They were very fearful. They knew that the danger when Duryodhana, he was owed a favor by Durvasa Muni. When Durvasa Muni came, he said, please go and see the Pandavas. They're in the forest. You should go there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and see them with your disciples, and you should take your meal there. So everyone eats their lunch at 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock. So 4 o'clock, there'll be no lunch left. So Draupadi, she had a special power. This is a very famous story, that she could produce unlimited food from her pot so long as she didn't eat. She had to be the last one to eat. Once she ate, it stopped producing for that day until the next sunrise. So she could have feed 50,000 people with her special, I think it's like the benediction that every housewife would like to have. No matter how many guests come, you have this pot, you can get unlimited. So she got from some big saint, gave her this blessing, here, you can have a pot, you can feed as many people you want, until you eat. Once you eat, then it's finished. Because he's a great saint, they did great austerities, and they built up their spiritual power. If they just said something, it would happen. They are known as Satyavak. Whatever they say, it will happen. Once they say something, they can't take it back, though. That's the danger. If you're a Satyavak, whatever you say, it happens. Then you have to be very careful. If you say the wrong thing, so sometimes these saints, they have this power, but then they would become very impatient when they would see some wrongdoing. They would sometimes curse the people. Then afterwards, the people would beg, please save me, you know. And they said, well, I've already done it. Like one time, Indra, he insulted... anyway, that's a heavy one. So there are different histories like that. So Durvasa Muni, he went to see the Pandavas in the forest when they were cursed in the forest with all of his disciples. So when the Pandavas heard it, they were immediately afraid. Oh no, how are we going to feed him prasadam? How are we going to, if we don't feed him and he's dissatisfied with us, he'll curse us. If we could satisfy him, he'll bless us, give us anything. But if we dissatisfy him, then he's going to curse us, and then we're really finished. So she'd already taken from her, but she runs to Krishna. This is the nature of the devotees. They go to Krishna. Krishna, please, surrender at your lotus feet. What should we do now? We're in this emergency and this danger that Durvasa Muni with his 50,000 disciples has come, and they're taking a bath. They're going to come any minute to take their lunch. There's no way we can feed 50,000 people. And if we don't feed, he'll be impatient and he may curse us. So then what did Krishna do? He said, all right, you have anything left in your pot? I think so. Why do you go back and if there's even any morsel of vegetable, anything, you bring that here. So of course there was one little piece of vegetable, one pea or something. He brought that back, gave it to Krishna. He just took it, and all of the Krishna, oh, now I'm fully satisfied. And by Krishna being completely feeling full, because the sages and all living entities are his part and parcel, all those say they felt all of a sudden as if they'd eaten a full meal, completely packed up. So they felt, if I go to the Pandavas to eat dinner, you know, I can't eat anything. I'm completely full. How does it happen? They all went away. Not to, in this way they were saved by Krishna. So we get to see though how the Pandavas were so careful. They didn't think, this Durvasa Muni, who is he? He's just some Mayavadi. Something like that, you know. He's just some sage. We're great Vaishnavas. We don't have to worry about it. They were really concerned. Oh, some great sages come. We have to deal appropriately. So that's a Indra is also a devotee, but he's a devotee with material desires. There's two types of devotees, Sakam Bhakta and Niskam Bhakta. Kama means desire in this context. Sakam means with desire. Someone who's a devotee of the Lord, but he wants some material benediction for the Lord in exchange for his service. Most of the people fall in this category. They pray to God, give me wealth, give my children good health, give my country peace, they're all. Problem is that, like in all the Germans, they were praying for the husbands to come back and for the victory in the war during the Second World War. But of course, all the French are doing the same thing and the Allies. And so, you know, in that case, which side does God take? They're all praying. So Prabhupada explained that there's this dichotomy that everybody praying to God, praying to the Supreme Lord for His protection. The thief prays, please allow me to steal from the householder and get out without getting shot or caught. And the householder is praying, please protect us from the thieves. So whose prayer does he hear? The thief saying, I have nothing to eat, my children are dying, I can't get a job, it's the only thing I know how to do. Please let me steal and not get caught. And actually in India, the thieves do pray. I don't know in America if the thieves pray, but I think that... I know that in India the thieves actually pray to either some demigod or someone to give them protection while they steal. And they usually do that stealing in the dark moon night when Kali is more favorable to these type of persons. So the householder, he's also... So Prabhupada explained that because they're both people with desires, they're both... So he has to take a neutral position. But he gives the advantage to the person who is basically following the more pious path. He'll give the householder some warning that a thief is coming, some intuition. So many times you read in the paper, suddenly the little lady wakes up and she suspects something, and she's sitting in her living room with her, you know, because then the thief sure enough comes through the window. No. Somehow Krishna gives some warning. Prabhupada explained, just like mosquitoes bite you, they buzz once around your ear. Bzzz. You know, why do they do that? It's like a little warning by Krishna. There are mosquitoes here, watch out. But the mosquito eats your blood. If he doesn't take your blood, he's going to die. So you can't deprive the mosquito of the food, but at least give you a little warning that you save your skin, save your blood. Prabhupada also gave the example that in the jungle in Bengal, there's the Bengal tiger. Bengal tiger is actually, some of them are bigger than lions. Some of them weigh almost 1 ton. And the average weight is between 500 to 700 kilos, over 1,500 pounds. And some of them get to be 12 feet long. An average length is like 8 feet. They're very powerful. So they can even swim, because what chance does a deer have? At a short distance, these tigers are tremendously fast. They're supremely powerful. So there's nature gives the deer a break. Krishna gives the deer a break. There's a little animal that accompanies the tiger. It's like a little rodent, like a guinea pig. And it's so small that it just goes in a little brush and holes and things, and it's too small for the tiger to catch. He always just kind of trails the tiger. I don't know, maybe he eats the droppings or something. I don't know, he's some karma that this little animal, wherever the tiger goes, he's going along. And so as soon as the tiger is ready to strike, he goes out in front, tee, 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 tee. So then the deer knows this animal is only with tigers, nowhere else. Tiger, boom, runs off. The tiger's smart, he waits downwind so the scent doesn't get to the animal. But if the deer or whatever, the zebra or whatever it is a little spaced out, doesn't listen, he's got a flash second, just 1 second. The animal, just when the tiger's ready to strike, the little guinea pig type animal goes out. And if he moves, he'll be saved. If he just think, let me just sip a little more water, that's it. So this is the Swakam devotee. They get some little break. But because they have desire, everyone praying for their food, for their material welfare, so the pious people get little advantage. But if they neglect that, or if they become offensive, or they become careless, they lose it. The difference in a Niskam devotee, he doesn't want God praying. Krishna may give all facility to his devotee to do his service. Pandavas, they didn't have any, they were the emperors of the world. They were in tough straits for some time. But it was their karma, it was their duty, it was their religion, it was everything for them to be the emperors of the world. It was their hereditary right. Their family were the rulers of the world. They were the rightful heirs to the throne. Due to different tricks, they were deprived for some years. But that was their... But actually, they didn't want it for their own sense gratification. It was part of their property, you can say. They wanted to use it rather to serve Krishna. So they always would go to Krishna and consult Krishna, and they would, everything they did was with the purpose of satisfying Krishna. So in reciprocation, Krishna would always protect. So usually when you see that the Niskam devotee is always dependent upon Krishna, Prabhupada explains that what is the difference? He said that the normal devotee that has some desire, that What is the difference? He said that the normal devotee that has some desire, the Sakhandha, whenever there's some distress, they go to the Lord. Please help me. When there's no problem, then they forget. But even when the Pandavas achieved their throne, they requested Krishna to come. They gave him all the honors, the Rajasuya sacrifice, first offer, everything. All respect was given to Krishna, whether in their success or in their distress. But the normal Sakham kind of a pious person, when they get some wealth, they what do we need, God? I got what I need. I got money. I got my position. So they start to become blinded. So then due to their offenses or due to their bad karma activities, sinful activities, then they have to take the reaction later. Depending on if it's an offense, you get bang, right off, right immediately can hit. If it's a bad karma, it may take a while to accumulate before it builds up. It's a pretty complex issue. In our preaching, though, we can see that just like here, the demigods, due to their activities, the whole universe is suffering. But because the devotees are performing their spiritual activities, this is increasing the strength. By doing the Harinam Sankirtan sacrifice, this increases the strength of the pious people. Just like there's a phenomenon in the world over the past 2 decades, which wasn't there before, that the tremendous consciousness about ecology, about natural living, you know, the Greens in Europe, they're actually becoming a very big political force in America, the New Age movement. Now, these are mainly impersonalists. They're mainly people that maybe, or they want some pious result in their life. But basically, they're demigods. They're people that are interested in some kind of more mortal goodness thing, natural living, so on. Somewhat, you know, maybe contaminated with some leccha javana, you know, being in this Western society, it's not completely pure, but in a sense, they're pious people. They're people who are more directed, demigod, you can say category. And so they're wanting that war, there shouldn't be war, there should be peace, there should be peace on earth, there shouldn't be, you see, the ionosphere shouldn't be destroyed by carbofluorides, things like that. There should be, you know, they're worrying, they're thinking about the welfare of everyone, not only themselves. They want their own satisfaction, no doubt, but they want also that the world should be a peaceful place like that. This is basically the mood of the demigod mentality. Where the demons, they want their own profit, by hook or by crook, by any means. They don't really care if there's 100 people, if they can get $10 each of them, and then that means that they have, you know, $1,000 and they're all, that's alright, whatever they can do to get, they'll take everything from someone if they can, even if it breaks their back. That's more the demonic mentality, where the demigod, alright, they want to do their honest work, they want to get their happiness, but they like to see that the whole world can also be happy. So there's these two mentalities. Krishna explains in great length in the Bhagavad Gita, in the chapters on the divine and demonic mentalities. There's these two types of mentalities. Now the devotees, they're definitely in the demigod category, but actually they're in a superficial analysis. The Prabhupada explained that actually they're in a transcendental category. He explained one time, we were riding out to Mayapur, he was sitting in the car, and there was Krishna and Balaram. He always had this Krishna and Balaram picture on his windshield. In fact, even in Vrindavan during his final pastime, he would take the same picture and always look at it. Krishna and Balaram. And he said to Krishna and Balaram, he said, in this world, there are the forces of good and the forces of evil. There's the demigod and the demoniac forces. And they're always competing with each other. Sometimes the demigod prevails, sometimes the demoniac influence prevails. And they're at war with each other constantly. The difference is the demigods, they appeal to Krishna and Balaram for their help. They go to the Supreme Lord for help. But the demons, they don't believe in God, or they don't consider that's a very important thing to have the help of God. So they don't ask for any help, generally speaking. So therefore, generally speaking, the demigods prevail, because they get the help from Krishna. But actually Krishna is neutral. He's reciprocating with both according to their desire. The demon said there's no God, so for him he's not there. And the demigods say, please help us, so he's reciprocating and helping. When Bali Maharaj Although he was the head of the demons, he started to worship Krishna. He defeated the demigods because he was more determined at that time. He was more rigid about his vows. So, or when the demigods make offenses, then they lose that shelter of Krishna, then sometimes the demons overcome them. So Prabhupada was explaining this whole good and evil, this whole battle that's going on, and how Krishna and Balaram are actually neutral, they're transcendental. He said, actually the devotees, people mistake that the devotees are on the side of material goodness. But actually they're also transcendental to material goodness and material ignorance. They're also on the same spiritual category, spiritual level as Krishna, because they're directly serving Krishna, they're under Krishna's shelter. The devotees, they want more than just people should be materially happy. They want that people should actually come up to the spiritual platform and become devotees of Krishna. You see, so they're under a special kind of Chaitanya's internal agents, special CIA force, confidential associates of the Lord. Of course, in India, they always say, aren't you the CIA? But they have a different, they think we're working for America. They don't realize that we're not working for any government on this planet. We're working for the Krishna, the Supreme Government. So we can see that practically history is repeating itself. What's happened millions of years ago in some higher planetary system with Lord Indra and some great sage on that planet is repeating itself within our recorded history. You can see so many examples of it. We hear repeating itself in different ways even amongst the lives of devotees. You can see the parallels. So Prabhupada wanted us to identify that actually the dedicated devotees, they should identify with Krishna. They're of a different category that we should also respect. Anyone who's trying to serve Krishna, who's trying to please Krishna, that they're a very special person. They may have difficulties to overcome, but so long as their desire is like that, they're of a very special category. Narottam Das Thakur, of course he said, Grihe ba bone te take, je ba hagranga dake, se amar pranri. Whether someone is living in a grihastha ashram or living in a renounced ashram, if they, with devotion, are calling on the name of Lord Chaitanya, Haguranga, then, as far as I'm concerned, he's more dear to me than my life. Se amar pran. He's my life. Or in other words, my life is dedicated to serve him. So, the great acharyas, they had that vision. Not who was simply grihastha, who was sannyasi. Those are varnashram distinction. Different rules for life, rules for social order. We follow these. This is a somewhat superficial. We observe these because that's the way of civilized life. But over that, the actual important thing is who is dedicated to serving Krishna. In this world, if there's no devotees, if there's no one dedicated to simply serving God, to please God, to serve Krishna, to please for Krishna's satisfaction, then the world becomes an empty place. It's barren. Everyone is simply looking for their own interests. Some are pious and some... It's a very dry place. But actually, what makes the world have any auspiciousness is the fact that there's devotees of the Lord, pure devotees on the planet. When Maharaj Bagi, which we have here another Bagi, but this is the Maharaj Bagi, famous as descendant of the Sagar Maharaj, when he prayed to Mother Ganges to come down, she refused. She said, if I come down, then all the people will want to simply bathe in my water to get rid of their sinful reactions, and then they'll go out and commit more sinful activities. So I'll just become overburdened. So I don't want to come to your planet. Because if I come to your planet, I'll just have to be overburdened with sinful reactions. I know what human beings are like. They want to simply dump their sins and go out and do more sin. So I don't want to go there. So the how did Bagi, Maharaj Bagi, convince Mother Ganges? He said, no, but there's also pure devotees on this planet. And the pure devotees of Krishna will bathe in your water. Then Mother Ganges was so eager that, if the devotees will come and bathe in me, then I'll go. Then I'll get association with the devotees of Krishna. And the devotees, in their humility, they don't think, they think, I'm going to give the Ganges for my purification. It's the Charanamrita of Krishna. Krishna's lotus feet have touched the causal ocean and brought to Ganges, so it's sacred. So the devotees are going for that purpose. But the Mother Ganges, she wants association with devotees. So, if the devotees will come, then I can go. Even if other people will dump their sinful reactions on me, but if I can sometime get the association of a devotee, then it's worth it. So, we're very fortunate here in New Talabon and in Sankirtanpur that we have this community of devotees. Prabhupada said that he made the International Society for Krishna Consciousness as a society, an association of devotees, so that people could live in association with devotees of Krishna, with pure devotees. Pure devotees may be on different levels, but someone whose purpose is to please Krishna, to serve Krishna, that is the bottom line qualification. According to their realization, they may be Kanishna, Madhyam, Uttam, whatever. Prabhupada made this society in order that people could associate with each other. The devotees could have association. This is the instruction of the six Goswamis. It's the instruction of the previous acharyas. Bhakto sanevas. Tade acharan seve, bhakto sanevas. My life is dedicated, saying, Narottamosam, to serve the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his associates, and to live in the association with the Vaishnavas. Bhakto sanevas. To be able to live in association with devotees, this is a special benediction. The devotees, they're always talking about Krishna. They're serving Krishna. This is the nature of the devotees. They're dedicated to the welfare of everyone by serving the root of all existence. So we're really fortunate to have this type of association. The children are very fortunate to have the association of other Krishna conscious children. We have the association of so many protective Krishna conscious elders. So we should realize how great a mercy Srila Prabhupada has given us and try to protect this and expand it so that we can maintain this type of ideal spiritual environment. The people will be able to come and take shelter and be relieved from the very oppressive association of persons who are not in this transcendental consciousness. What Chaitanya said, to be an association with non-devotees who are simply interested in their own self, sense gratification, said is more painful than anything. He said he would rather be put in a cage, like a bird cage, and lowered in the fire than have to live in association with persons who are simply interested in their own sense gratification, who are not devotees, who are not interested in serving Krishna. It's so painful to be in that association. Even though there may be material facility, the atmosphere becomes very oppressive after a while. The relationships become very strained, becomes painful, becomes distasteful. So we're very fortunate. We should see how there's 4 billion or 5 billion people, I can't keep track, in the world today. Out of that, how many people are pure devotees? How many people are dedicated or even trying to become pure devotees? Someone may not be. Prabhupada said, an unripe banana, unripe mango, you keep it, it becomes ripe. So even someone may not be fully a pure devotee, they may have so many defects, but if their desire is like that, then in the future they will become. So they're considered like unripe, like green banana or green mango. In the future, if you just keep it, I was given a green mango in Ecuador. You couldn't eat it, it was hard. I just kept it on the shelf. After 3 days it became ripe, it was very sweet. So even though we may be many green mangoes, but if we stay in the fire of Krishna consciousness, we'll become ripened in due course. So we should appreciate how rare this is, that the people who are devotees, how important that association is. If we could realize that, then why would anyone ever want to leave the association of devotees? You can see that it's a type of insanity to leave such a wonderful association. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Any question?
How much time did you actually spend in the presence of Srila Prabhupada?
When are we in his presence? He's with us every day with his books. All the devotees are in Prabhupada's presence. We worship him in the temple. We follow his teachings. We're in his presence all of the time. You're in his presence now. You're sitting here, you're hearing his teachings. There's two types of presence. There may be the Vapu presence, and there's the Vani presence. There's the spiritual presence following his instructions. So through this process, this movement is dedicated to remaining 24 hours a day in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. You see, in the Vedas you can also find apparent discrepancies, because the Vedas, there are different sections. There's Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda. Most of the people in the world are Sakam devotees, or they are very innocent people, and either they're going to become demons or they're going to become devotees. So most of the scriptural injunctions are meant for making the people, inducing them to follow the laws of God, and as a result you'll get some material piety, some material prosperity, some material happiness. So people are mainly geared in that direction. So this is basically, the Vedas have a section that's called the Karma Kanda. You know, if you do charity, if you are kind to others, if you do good deeds, then as a result you'll get these type of reactions, you'll get these good results. So you compare that, then the Jnana Kanda is where people already kind of got above that level, and then they see that beyond this material prosperity, actually all material things are temporary. Nothing remains forever. So they want to see these eternal aspect. So then they want to realize the self, they want to achieve salvation. So that's basically your Jnana Kanda. So the lessons of Jnana Kanda sometimes seem to be in the opposite of the lessons for the Karma Kanda. But this point is that they're coming from a total, they're actually not contradictions. It's the, they're looking from a totally different perspective. They're meant for a different audience. And if you see how the relation between them, then you can see how it fits in. It's not, they're talking about apples and oranges. They're talking about two different things. So the Bible is primarily dealing with Karma Kanda also, morality, what to do, what not, and a little bit is there about Jnana Kanda, salvation. Now, Upasana Kanda is how to develop love for God. There's a whole section. You know, we study the books of Upasana Kanda, the topmost, pure Upasana Kanda books, the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya, simply constantly focusing on developing love for Godhead. Where like in the Bible, there's a hint to that. Like the Old Testament, then they fear God. You do wrong, you get punished. You do good, you get... Then Jesus said, love God. That's the top. But then he gives a glimpse of the Upasana Kanda. But most of the teachings, he's dealing with people who are not on that level. So either he entices them with salvation or with some material prosperity. So Jesus is teaching about a little more leaning to the Upasana Kanda. So you're going to see some contradiction, apparent contradiction, but actually it's the same presentation, simply maybe with different stories. Some stories are almost exactly identical as stories in the Vedas, simply the names and the places seem to have been changed a little bit in the lay. But the basic story of Noah's Ark, and the same stories there in the Vedas in Sanskrit. So there's not really, it's a contradiction, but unless one has a full understanding, unless you read all of Prabhupada's books several times, study them in great depth, then if you go back and you analyze what is Upasana Kanda, what is Jnana Kanda, what is Karma Kanda, and then you analyze from the Sattva, Rajatama, Gunas, then you analyze the Bible's teaching, then you can see where it fits in. You'll find there's nothing in the Bible that's not somewhere in the Vedas. But either it will be a karma, a jnana, or upasana kanda division. Between the two, there's different objectives, so the teachings are slightly different. If there are any questions on the verse today, any other question on the verse? That if you offend a Vaishnava, you lose the protection of Krishna, it takes away your immunity. That's, I mean, that's like an amazing, you know, analogy. I'm not meaning just like, there's so many diseases like cancer, I'm comparing with, specifically with AIDS. Because you're susceptible to any kind of maya if you lose Krishna's shelter. Any maya that, just like if you have any disease, they get it all at one time. Whatever, cancer, tuberculosis, pneumonia, everything. So that's why I use that particular disease analogy. As far as the protection, how to avoid committing offenses. How do you avoid getting a disease? Just like people, you have to wear gloves. You have to be careful. You have to be clean. You have to take precaution. And sometimes if you get the difference though, if you get this offensive mentality, like if you get AIDS, there's no cure. So far, they haven't found the antidote. But in the spiritual, there is a cure. But unfortunately, few people take it. The cure, of course, is to beg for forgiveness for the offense, to chant Hare Krishna, to try to become purified from that reaction by through humility and through devotion. One can get cured from the spiritual offenses. It's not, you commit offense, you're finished. There's no eternal damnation. But if one doesn't take the remedial measure. If it doesn't come to his senses, you can be delayed for a long time. It's like Nityadas, when he committed great offenses against Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said he won't get a bona fide spiritual master for 100,000 births. And all the devotees, wow, I mean, that's... Prabhupada said, I'm not cursing him. I'm reducing the sentence. He pointed out in the Shastra, it says that if you give up a bona fide guru and blaspheme him and so on, you can't get another guru for 10 million births. So he reduced it to 100,000. That's like 1,000% less, 1,000 times less. So depending on the severity, you see, of course, it has that there's gravity and there's consciousness. All these things play a part. So we have criticism, but it should be constructive. It should be with the desire of correcting mistakes for the welfare of the individual. The normal way of discussing someone's, you go directly to the person. Or if you're a subordinate, you're not, then you go to someone who would be in a position to help that person. If you see that there's some apparent fallen problem or some apparent need for improvement. There's a certain methodology to avoid offenses. Like Prabhupada, sometimes he wanted to instruct us by illustrating the mistakes of his godbrother. So I noticed that he had a certain technique, that he wouldn't say that this person is this, this, this. He would ask it in a form of a question, that what is he doing for his spiritual master? He's done this. What is he actually doing? You know, another, he wouldn't take it the next step and say he's a this or he's a that. He would just ask as a question. If you make it as a question, I mean, that's like, I don't know, technique. But this way, without actually going to the step of saying, he would ask in the form of a question. Even one time he was preaching to the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was his level of his guru. So he couldn't directly say, to a godbrother you can say, you're wrong, you know, you're off. But to a superior it's difficult to do so. So then without speaking to him, he spoke to the other people. He said that if someone can do something to serve the mission of the guru, and someone doesn't allow that to happen, but he cannot do anything himself, then isn't that a hellish mentality or something like that? Isn't that a materialistic mentality or hellish mentality? You can judge for yourself. It's not like you're saying, person has got a hellish, you know, you're saying, you know. Prabhupada was careful about, you know, I don't say that I know the entire science, but I could just see that he would be very careful when dealing with superiors. He would be careful how he talked with them. But sometimes they would do things which were very spiritually off, and he would see that. But then he would present it in a strong way. I mean, he was practically screaming, is this not a hellish mentality? You not do anything for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and the person who can do, you don't allow him to do it? Is this a proper mentality? You know, it's like, it was very heavy, but what he was actually saying was not offensive. It was the truth, you know, it was, where if he said something else, if he say something, you know, you're a demon, or you're, you know, then it just becomes offensive, you know. So, he didn't lose control, he always kept it to the spiritual point, kept the proper presentation. So as a result, then the people, they would listen to what he said, even though he was, by some social order, he was subordinate, they would listen. At that time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son was 100 years old, Prabhupada was 80. Like this, I've seen many. The real thing, of course, is to, if we appreciate the devotees, we may make a mistake, we're living together. There's a Bengali saying, if you got 5 pots of water, clay pots of water in the back of a bullock cart, you're going down the road, they're bound to bump into each other. It's a natural thing. So, you know, amongst ourselves, Prabhupada said we should forgive and forget very easily. We should apologize if we make, you know, later we come to our sense. And like this, we shouldn't let things become bigger than they are. This type of things can be corrected easily. Major things like Ramchandra Kaviraj calling, insulting Nityananda Prabhu or something, that's another category. But we should be careful, you know, in general, avoid offense and to appreciate the great qualities of the Vaishnava. Hare Krishna.